All right, welcome to Hebrew Club, you guys. We are on Psalm 37. I think we actually got through the first 13 verses, so through the section Zion. Notice that this is an acrostic, and we're ready to start on verse 14 of this really interesting psalm. And so we're ready to start with the Chet. And just remember, look, if you'll notice again, every other line or every third line even in this section is the different letter of the alphabet. So you're kind of going that way. All right. And again, we're in this section talking about the wicked. So verse 14, Cherev pachu rasha'im v'darku kashtam. Cherev is sword. Now notice how the rasha'im is the subject of pachu. Pachu normally means to open, like a door. But notice here, when you're talking about a sword, it's not the wicked open a sword. What it means is the wicked unsheath a sword. See? And vedarku means to walk. But here, in this case, they step kashtam on their bow. Keshet. All right? So, in other words, you know when you prepare a bow, you got to step on it and bend it. Yeah. That's what it's talking about. So it doesn't mean they kind of walk on it or tread on it. They're getting it ready to fight, all right? And now the reason here, lehapil ani ve'evyon litvoch yishrei derek, to cause to fall. Notice that this is from nafal, hifil, infinitive. To bring down, I would probably translate it. Notice that this whole clause is a purpose clause. So they unsheath their sword, the wicked do. They tread their bow in order to bring down the ani, the humble one, and the evyon, the poor. All right. Now here's another one. Litvoach. Tavach means to slaughter. So this is another call infinitive construct. In order to slaughter the yishrei darek, the upright of way, or those who are upright in the way. All right. And notice Derek here is a shorthand for the way they live. They walk the way of the Lord. Notice how we use that metaphor for a way of life. Life is a journey. You walk. You take one path or another. You have to decide where you're going to go, all those kinds of things. And it's a very common metaphor in the Psalms. So the upright of the way. Namely, those who follow the way of the Lord.
Okay. So much so that you forget it's a metaphor.
Yeah, it's a dead metaphor, basically. In other words, it's not a poetic or lively metaphor. We'd call it a dead metaphor. It's become part of our language. And we talk that way all the time. And the reason we do it, it's rather interesting when you think about it. When you have an abstract concept like life, it's hard to get your mind around it. You don't know how to think about it. But if you relate it to something common, then you can come to some conclusions about it. So if you compare life to a journey, then you have to conclude, well, I'm going somewhere. I need to stop along the way. Certain plans I have to make. See how you begin to think about life that way? I mean, if you'll notice graduation, high school graduation sermons, since we've had so many in my family that have done that, Diane and I started to laugh at all the metaphors for life that the speakers would make. Life is the Starship Enterprise. Life is a ship. Life is a journey. I mean, when you guys have kids and start going through graduations, you'll hear all of those kind of metaphors. So there's all kinds that we make for life that help us think about it, see?
That happen in college graduations, too.
Yeah. Same thing, yeah. All right. Verse 15.
Did you have to look forward to?
Yep. Yeah. Verse 15. Charbam tavo belebam vekash totam tishabarna. Notice again, it starts with a sword. Here's the third line in this little verse from the Chet. Their sword, tavo, enters belibam, into their heart, lev. Here's the plural of keshet, kashtot, and their arrows, tishav. Notice this one, tishabarna. Tishabarna is from shabar, means to break. Okay, and it's a nifal imperfect. All right, and so it means, and notice it's the third feminine plural. They will be broken. So notice how you have to kind of adjust your understanding of this line based on what's previous. So it's their sword will enter into their own heart, see, and their arrows will be broken. So you have to see those three lines together. The wicked unsheath their sword, they tread their bow to bring down the humble and the poor, to slaughter the upright in way. Now here's the reversal. Their sword will enter into their own heart, and their arrows, Tisha Barna, will be broken.
So why does the ESV say their bows will be broken?
I'm sorry, it should be bow. That's my bad. Their bow. Yeah, Keshet is bow. Sorry about that.
I just wonder if there was a different
one. Yeah, Kate's arrow.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's all right. I'm glad you made that correction.
No, I was curious as to why translation would be different. Would lose in the English idiom.
Right. No, they're right. I'm wrong. All right.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Any question through 15? I'm glad you corrected. All right. 16. Tov me'at la tzadik. Mehamon rasha'im rabim. All right. Now, notice how each verse kind of puts you on a different subject, a different path, which is really what I like about this. Different moment in life, different situation, see? Good ma'at, a little. Okay, so good a little latzadik, to the righteous. So good is a little to the righteous. Mehamon, now notice as soon as you have a adjective good followed by a min, you know it's going to be comparative.
Right.
So good a little to the righteous. Then a hamon, that's abundance. All right, so better is a little to the righteous than an abundance of reshaim rabim, than an abundance of a multitude of wicked. So notice, if you have a multitude of wicked ones and they all have an abundance, it's better to be a tzaddik with a little good. Okay, tov ma'at latzadik.
Are they referring to like material goods?
Yeah.
Okay.
Prosperity, earthly prosperity, all those kinds of things. Correct. Okay. And again, notice this wisdom thing. It's trying to affect you on an affective level because our natural inclination is to be envious of people with a lot and think, well, I should follow what they do, live like they believe, because they're the prosperous ones. So notice how he tries to affect you away from that with this very simple saying that kind of strikes you, all right? He's trying to correct kind of our temptation as we're walking on the way. Notice if you think of this psalm as taking you on a journey, at every stop you have temptations, and this gives advice or direction or hope or comfort in every step of the way. So verse 14, there's all these dangers on the way. Don't worry, their own sword will enter into their heart. Okay, so here we have the next line as to why he says what he says in verse 16. Ki zeraot rasha'im tishavarna v'sumek tzadikim adonai. For zeraot, this is from zeroah, their arms or their right arms. Okay, reshaim, so the arms of the wicked, tishavarna, will be broken. There's that word again from shavar, nifal imperfect, third feminine plural. All right. Vesomek, call participle, from samak to support. Okay. Vesomek, and the one supporting or the supporter of the tzadikim is Yahweh. The supporter of the righteous is Yahweh. So good is a little to, or better is a little to the righteous than an abundance of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked will be broken. And the one who supports the righteous, or the supporter of the righteous, is Yahweh.
Could you understand that the other way? The one leaning on Yahweh, or the ones leading on, the righteous are the ones leaning on
Yahweh? Well, the only thing is that the participle is singular, mm-hmm. and tzadikim is plural. Which is why I made Yahweh the subject.
Mm-hmm. But what if you use a collective?
Well, I mean, it's not impossible because you do have, usually then, tzaddik is usually not a collective because there's a plural that it's used for. So that's why I thought it was that.
What is that? ESV says...
ESV says, but the Lord upholds the righteous.
Right.
Yeah, Yahweh is the one supporting the righteous. That's right.
Yeah.
See, I just did a little different. The supporter of the righteous is Yahweh, or Yahweh supports the righteous.
I found an interlinear Hebrew Bible. It's actually three volumes. And instead of saying Yahweh, it says Jehovah all the way through.
That's a more older. That's because it's using the consonants Yud-Heh, Vav-Heh, and the vowels for Adonai. Remember that Jehovah is a made-up word because the Masoretic text points Yud-Heh, Vav-Heh with the Shva comets because it doesn't want you to say Yahweh. They want you to say Adonai whenever you hit that word. Well, if you put Yehovah, see, if you pronounce those accents with the consonants, you're going to get Jehovah. Okay. That's what's happening. Okay? Verse 18. Yodea Adonai Yemei Temimim V'nachalatam Le'olam Tihyeh. All right. Yodea is another call participle. Yahweh knows Yemei. Again, the plural construct from Yom. Yahweh knows the days of the Temimim. Tamim is the ones with integrity, the pure ones. Tamam, to be pure, to be innocent. So Yahweh knows the days of the innocent ones, the pure ones. The Nachalatam, and their inheritance forever will be. And their inheritance will be forever. All right? So notice how he begins to encourage people there. And that knows, again, notice it's really important that we see Yahweh's knowing is not just knowing about, but Yahweh's knowing is a caring for, and even, Israel I have known above all the nations of the earth. That has to do with election, his choice. So it's not just that Yahweh knows about the days. That knows, in our language, it's hard to get that meaning without another word. Yahweh chooses the days. Yahweh looks over the days. Yahweh cares for the days.
Is this the is this the same kind of knowing that the Old Testament languages refers to as the intimate connection between a husband and a wife?
This is the same word. Right. That's right. Same word.
It reminds me of Exodus when God sees the affliction and he knew.
That's
basically where it stops.
Right.
Oh, he knew. Okay.
He knows.
Yeah, he took it into account and now he's going to act.
Right. So it's more than just cognitive knowing about. And that's what's important. Okay? All right. Verse 19. Lo yevoshu be'et ra'ah. Uvime re'avon yisba'u. They will not be ashamed. Yevosh is, again, a call imperfect from bosh. It's a hollow verb. To be ashamed, okay? They will not be ashamed. Be'et ra'ah. In the time of trouble. Uvime, or in days of re'avon. This means hunger or famine. It occurs a handful of times, but ra'av means to be hungry. Okay? Ra'av is a hungry person. So in the days of famine, yisba'u, they will be satisfied from sava, call imperfect form. So they will not be ashamed in a time of trouble. And in the days of ra'avot, famine, they will be satisfied.
I had two questions. First of all, the pointing on yevoshu, it's a hollow verb, but it has a seri under the yud.
Right. Because you have, with stative verbs, you tend to get that pointing rather than, like kum is ya, kum for the call. Mm-hmm. All right. To be high. So, sometimes you get the comets under. I'm trying to think of another example besides bosh. I think this is probably the most common one. But when you have, it's the same thing that happens with double eins. So remember for savav, the double ein, you get yasov, it can be yisov, all right, yasov or yisov. Or if it's kalal, it's yay kal or yay, that seire.
That's with the geminate.
That's with the geminate, and the same thing with the hollows. You get that, okay. Right. I just can't think of another hollow one
Because usually you see Sari underneath there, you're thinking, all right, the yud has dropped.
Right.
And then first it's a different verb.
Looks like a first yud.
Yavash.
Yavash means to be dry, right?
Right.
And I think that's yivash is the imperfect, but I have to look that up for sure. I can't remember.
And then salva, the last verb?
Yes.
Is that a stative or a regular verb?
To be satisfied. They will be, it's
so
stative.
So stative, but it's not pointed as a stative in the call, third masculine singular?
In the plural form. It would be yasav. It would be sava ye. I think it'd be ye. Let's see.
It looks like a third comma.
Sava. It's from sava.
Because my real question is it stative? Yesu. What makes a stative verb? How we translate it to be stated, or how it's pointed?
Yeah. It's the meaning. So I mean, usually, like in a stative perfect form, to be heavy, you're going to have a tsere under there instead of a patak. Kaved,
mm-hmm.
Malay. But sometimes there's Malay, means to be full, to fill. You know, sometimes they're kind of quasi-statives. So, sava...
pointed like a...
Pointed just like a regular, right. It just depends on... I see what you're saying now. There's no tsere under there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes you have that.
Okay.
So it's not infallible.
But we would call that a stative.
But we would still be stative, yeah, to be satisfied. Yeah. Yeah. Good question. Anything else? Everybody get that? What he's saying is that yisba'u just looks, it's pointed just like katal. Most statives...
does the badon kafash throw it off too?
Not really, no. Okay. But... It's not a first yud verb. See,
it's an imperfect, sin. Right?
Yeah, it's an imperfect from sava. Yis betu. Yiktelu, same thing. Okay? All right, verse 20. Kirashaim yovedu ve'oive adonai ki kar karim. Kalu be'ashan kalu. Okay. Indeed, or for the wicked, yovedu, will perish from avad. I say I'm willing to eat what you bake, though I perish, which is why you have that form of the imperfect, that yud kolam form. Ki reshaim yovedu. For the wicked will perish, ve'oive, and the enemies of Adonai, oyev, and the enemies of Adonai are like, now here's, this is a textually difficult thing, but yakar means precious. And the enemies of Yahweh are like, it's the preciousness of Karim. The word kar is pasture, so this Karim is pastures. Like the preciousness of pastures, or like the rare things of the pastures. I think what it means is things, you'd have to think in terms of things that are very transitory, things that don't stay very long, kind of rare, precious in that sense. Now, kalu, notice, is really interesting here. Kala means to come to an end. So they, and this is a call form, kala, call perfect. They end be'ashan, in smoke they end. All right? I mean, notice then the switch in verb form. So you have imperfect, yovedu, in the first line. For the wicked perish, and the enemies of the Lord are like the preciousness of the fields. They end... In smoke, they end. So it's very kind of rhetorical. I mean, notice the impact that it gets you, this kind of great truth that comes through. Notice that even ever since like verse 16, he's been arguing against appearances, that the wicked appear prosperous, they have all this stuff, but it's better to have a little and be one of the tzaddik. And here he's kind of giving you all the reasons. So he's arguing against that by talking about the transitoriness of what they have versus the steadfastness, the endurance of the tzaddik. So in verse 18, his inheritance is forever. They won't be ashamed in the day of trouble. See, the wicked will perish. They will end, they will end.
It reminds me of the New Testament teaching about the foolish farmer who said, mm-hmm. Let me tear down my barns because they're full and build bigger ones. And the Lord says, you fool, that's not your soul that's required of you.
Yeah, that's another kind of wisdom parable. Okay? Good. 21. Lo v'rasha v'lo yeshalem v'tzadik chonin v'notein. Okay, lova is a simple participle, call. Notice the segol under there is because it's a third hey. All right? And it means to borrow. So notice the rasha is the subject. The wicked person borrows velo yeshalem, and he does not pay back. That's a PL, imperfect, third masculine, singular, from shalom. All right? And shalom means to be whole or to be complete. Here, he does not pay back. He does not make it whole, make it right, so to speak. So the wicked one borrows, and he does not pay back. Vetzadik, but the righteous one, chonein. Notice the two participles. But the righteous one is generous, chonein, and gives. Now notice that chonein venotein, you could interpret that as a hendiades, two verbs, one idea. So, but the righteous one gives generously, chonein, gives graciously. Okay. Ki mevo rakav yirshu aretz umeku lalav yikaretu. For mevo rakav. That's from the root barak. Everybody see it? See that it's a participle and it's a pu'al. So it means to bless here, to be blessed, and those who are blessed. Okay? So indeed, and now notice you have this third masculine singular suffix. His blessed ones. Okay? And I would really translate something like, for those who are blessed by him, Yirshu will inherit the earth. This is a call imperfect from Yarash. Those who are blessed by him will inherit the earth. Okay? Umeku lalav, you know what this one is, from kalal, if barak is to bless, kalal means to curse, participle, all right, plural, pu'al, the cursed ones, those who are cursed by him, yikaretu, will be cut off, nifal from karat, nifal imperfect. So again, those who are blessed by him will inherit the earth, and those who are cursed by him will be cut off, all right. We'll go one more verse here. No, we'll go two more. It's a good place to stop at verse 24. Me Adonai mitzah de gever konanu vet darko yechpatz. From Yahweh are the, okay, mitzad is a footstep. From Yahweh are the steps of a man. Now notice he's still using this metaphor of life. Right? So from Yahweh are the steps of a man. Konanu, that's a polal from kun, to be established. They are established. Vedarko, and his way, well, he delights in his way. Yech pat, chafatz is to delight in, and he favors his way. So from Yahweh are the steps of a man. They are established, they are made firm. And he delights in his way, darko. Okay? Again, notice the metaphor that is kind of the overarching metaphor behind the language. Ki yipolo yutal. All right. For he will fall, or when he falls, that's from nafal, call imperfect, when he falls. Lo yutal. Now look at that form. That is a hollow verb. And it means to hurl down, yutal. This is a hafal imperfect. You don't see these very often, and they sometimes overlap with, the hollow verbs overlap. They look identical to the geminates. So when he falls, he will not be hurled down. Something like that. Ki Adonai so make Yado. For Yahweh so make, again we had that word up above, is holding or supporting Yado, his hand.
It's weird that Samach, here it's clear that Yahweh's the subject, and it would probably allow us to see that in above too, even clearer. Yeah. But the samak seems like it can be uphold or also to lean.
Right.
It's the action that happens with someone who needs help and the action of someone who is helping.
Right.
Isn't that correct?
Yep. Exactly.
So you have to understand what the subject is and what the direct object is.
Yeah, you have to kind of look. That's right.
And there's another direct object marker there to
clue you in.
Well, right, right. That's terse. And again, notice you're kind of looking at the context and the best English translation for some mock. Good. Any other questions? All right, way to go. We're making good headway through this, baby.